Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Let me check through the glass. Boom! John Ramos is here as well.
Ramos.
On a Friday. Oh, actually, it's a Wednesday. So that's used to saying on a Friday. We're on a hump day today, February 12th. Trust me, I know it's not a Friday.
We can edit that out, Dan. No big deal. It's radio.
Let's have it. We're usually here on Fridays hanging
Fire.
Out. But today is a Wednesday. It's a Wednesday. It's a Wednesday. It's February 12th. It's a Wednesday. Farmers Insurance brings you today's Doug Gottlieb Show. Farmers Insurance knows a thing or two about how to save a buck or two when you bundle home and auto. So visit farmers.com or call 1-800-FARMERS and get a quote today.
Are we playing Thursday?
No, Buzz Williams. We aren't playing Thursday. Let me try that again. So visit farmers.com or call 1-800-FARMERS and get a quote today. We are farmers.
Making sponsors proud here at Fox Sports Radio all the way up until 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
We are farmers.
You ever have one of those dreams where you don't know what day it is and you can't get anything straight? And that's what it was.
When I used to work the early mornings, and you remember those time slots to where you're waking up at like midnight to go in to do work,
mm-hmm.
You're always in this state of panic that you're going to oversleep the rest of your days. Like anybody that works like really early hours knows, like there is no hitting the snooze button. The snooze button means you're going to be late to work. Absolutely. And so like there was a time to where for months and months after that, and still happens from time to time now, just scars going back in time, retroactive to waking up in that time slot. I'll wake up and I don't know where I am, and I swear to God, it's like I've been abducted by aliens. Like I can't focus on anything. I'm panicked. I don't know if I'm supposed to. The dreams are weird. So I hear you. I hear you, Dan.
Miles Garrett got reinstated today. But before we get to that, longest nap you've ever taken? Like, is there a limit on how long a nap can be?
9 hours.
9 hour
yeah,
nap.
I swear to God.
Oh,
yeah, that was during that same time period. I laid down on a Friday, had plans with my girlfriend to go out to dinner at 7:30. I laid down at 3 o'clock, was going to take like an hour and a half, 2 hour nap tops. I woke up and it was 12:45. Missed every call, everything. She thought I was fooling around. I mean, she lost it. But I felt great afterwards.
Yeah, you were well rested.
Unbelievable.
Well rested, able to stay up and watch as many infomercials
as
you
wanted.
Yeah, it's great. My wife, bless her heart, who was busy taking care of her father, just, you know, some stuff you have to do here and there, and, you know, some doctor's appointments and whatnot, took a 4.5 hour nap yesterday. She's going to kill me for saying it, but there was a break in between when I got home from work, but she was out cold. It was actually about 5.5 hours.
And
at that point, I'm like, what is a nap and what is just going to bed super duper early with the random intermissions in between?
Because going to bed is a little bit more formal. Going to bed involves covers and pajamas and the works. You know, you've really made it a point that you're going to sleep. Taking a nap, it's just you lay where you lay. You may have a blanket, you may not. You might still have the same clothes on that you were wearing all day long, and then you just let it ride.
Oh,
and you see
man.
Where it goes.
Same clothes, been there, done that. Miles Garrett back in the National Football League, reinstated today by the NFL after meeting with Commissioner Roger Goodell earlier this week. And what I just find so interesting about this case was just how easy it transpired. Like we were at the Super Bowl 2 weeks ago, and it was 2 weeks ago today that Commissioner Roger Goodell had a State of the League address and mentioned and was asked about the Myles Garrett situation, and the reports of all of that were basically, all right, Myles Garrett is going to get reinstated. So then you had the meeting on Monday, I believe, this week, and then now officially reinstated today. And it seems like, wow, what a nice, easy transition for the Cleveland Browns to get their pass rusher back when that was arguably one of the biggest stories of the 2019 NFL season.
So you remove a helmet off another human being, you hit him over the head with it, and then you lie and say there was racial slurs used, and that's what prompted it. That gets out. You're already suspended. And the league says, it's been long enough. Hey, February 12th, you're back, buddy. Like, I thought, we were talking about this before the show, I thought this was going to linger on throughout the offseason. And it just makes me wonder, is this to appease the gamblers who are trying to set week one lines? Is this to appease the gamblers who are looking at the over-under win total? Is this them trying to help Cleveland out and say, here's what your roster is going to look like if you need to address anything at the draft? It felt like it was going to come later in the offseason, not this soon.
I think it's the NFL realizing that hey, this is a situation that maybe didn't have the ramifications that maybe it should have of, I mean, there was a player with a weapon in his hand and swung it, striking another player. Like, that's absurd. Like,
is that bad?
If that was a baseball bat in baseball, like, think about that. And Jonas, they may not be the same, but they aren't as far off as you may think, like, that sort of action would be. So if you think of, like, that, what would happen in, like, that sort of scenario in Major League Baseball, the amount of games that you would miss is striking. And that's what I think was so unique about this whole situation from beginning to end, was how the National Football League almost massaged this suspension. If you were to come out and say, Myles Garrett, and he was not going to be allowed to play in the playoffs if the Browns made the postseason. But if you came out and said, Myles Garrett, 6-game suspension for taking his helmet and swinging it to Mason Rudolph, you actually then attribute value to it, where you can compare a domestic violence incident, a drug bust, a player violating the code of conduct, and then comparing it to Myles Garrett's act and saying, well, geez, Myles Garrett got 6 games and this guy only got 4 for doing this to whoever. Like, that is something to me that where the NFL was really smart in not putting the number on it and just saying indefinite suspension. And they've done this before, but what indefinite suspension, when you say rest of the season, that sounds a lot longer than it is. If it was just 6 games for what, and that's what it ended up being, I think that the NFL is criticized more than they are for this. They did a great job PR-wise in handling in what could have been one of the ugliest scenes that you've seen in the NFL.
If it was Ben Roethlisberger and not Mason Rudolph, you think he's already reinstated? I don't think so.
You think it's a different story?
I think it's a star-driven league, and I think that had this been a franchise quarterback, a star quarterback in the NFL, and this happened, I don't think he'd be reinstated. I don't think they would have announced it at least this early in the offseason. The timing is a little bit bizarre. And to your point, it does feel like it's just too simple, like too easy. And maybe we're just used to the big, long, drawn-out process of investigations and reports that come out and a gate attached to the end of whatever the drama is. But it just feels like I thought it was going to happen later in the season. I expected him to get a couple of games into next season. That's what I thought. I thought, all right, half of 16 games, make it 8. After 2 weeks, he's back. I was a little bit surprised that they decided that this was enough.
This is what the NFL is telling us, is that everything inside these lines and within our game is fine. This is good. But Antonio Brown, who we'll get to later, in his situation, and the many different layers, and I'm not trying to compare and to draw parallels to what Antonio Brown is being accused of and what he has done off the field, to what Myles Garrett has done. But what it does tell me, Jonas, is that the NFL is willingly ready to move on from something that happened on their watch, inside their lines on primetime TV, and try to do as much as you can to make you forget about it, as opposed to the bunch of different loops and hurdles that other players, when reinstated or trying to be reinstated, will have to go through. Think about, and Antonio Brown may not be the best example, but think about Josh Gordon and what he has to go through or would have to go through to get back into the National Football League. It's to show the examples of this. It's to show this. It's to pass this test. It's to do that. All of the different hurdles for doing stuff off of the field that may reflect poorly on the NFL, because this happens inside the lines of the NFL, and the blame that you could put on could be on the National Football League. It seems like this was moved on from so quickly to make us be, all right, no, he's good. This is good. We've got everything is good here. Let's move on. I think there's striking differences with how the NFL handles with their on the field, within the boundary stuff, and off the field
stuff. All right, I'm going to throw a little bit of a conspiracy theory, although I don't think it's that much of a conspiracy theory, but I do think there's a little bit something to it. Do you think the NFL did this so that when they release the schedules coming up, which is usually what, April, they do it?
Yeah, about a week before the draft.
Yeah, weeks before the draft. So 2 months from now when they release the schedules, that way people can point and go, ooh, Myles Garrett back in Pittsburgh this time.
Sure.
And who knows, maybe that's the season opener. Ben Roethlisberger's back. Myles Garrett's back. If the NFL puts Pittsburgh-Cleveland in one of the primetime spots to open up the season, I'm telling you right now, this is exactly why they announced it now.
And if it's in Cleveland, then Myles Garrett should run out swinging a Pittsburgh helmet in starting introductions. Because the NFL allowed this to end up happening. I mean, just it was so easy. Listen, as you said, you thought maybe it would go into a couple of games next year. Which actually, 8 games, half a season, I think is something to be like, okay, that's legitimate. That's quite a bit. You can use it to compare to other things. Kareem Hunt ended up getting 8 games for his suspension. But the indefinite suspension headline of Myles Garrett just was another way for the NFL to be like, I mean, indefinite. When you think of indefinite, you think of all the different hurdles that you're going to have to cross. And it's February 12th. The season's been over for, 10 days, and we're already moving on.
Didn't Ezekiel Elliott get popped for 6 games for an accusation from an ex?
Mm-hmm.
And there was that. And then, there was that St. Paddy's Day parade where he, groped a woman. But he got popped 6 games for that. This was a cut and dry, easy answer for the NFL, because there's no way you appeal this. Like, what's the NFL going to say? Maybe you didn't strike him with your helmet. All right, we'll knock off a couple of games. No, it's clear cut. It was on national TV. Everybody saw it. This was an easy slam dunk for the NFL. If they wanted to tack on a couple more and really set a precedence, then they could have done it. At just 6 games and it's all over.
And your point of the accusations made by Myles Garrett about Mason Rudolph and what he said and the possible racial slurs that Garrett alleged happened, to just move on from that. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, that's pretty absurd.
I mean, look, man, first of all, I don't know for a fact that they didn't happen. I find it hard to believe, based on what everybody else is saying, that that's what happened and Mason Rudolph said that. And if it comes out that Myles Garrett lied about Mason Rudolph using racial slurs, I think that's worse than striking him with a helmet, because you've ruined somebody's reputation. Like, Mason Rudolph will never be looked at the same.
Mm-hmm.
His NFL career is always going to be defined by that. It's like when Jose Bautista got popped by Rougned Odor at second base. You don't think, when I say Jose Bautista, nobody thinks about the bat flip in the playoffs. They think about him getting cracked by Rougned Odor. Like, there are certain things, like Robin Ventura. Robin Ventura
That's
had a decent
one.
Career.
Yeah. I do think of bat flips with Joey Bats a little bit. Robin Ventura was good, too. I mean, everybody wanted his rookie card. Yep. Yeah, that's the one thing.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It did feel like this was a little bit rushed.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Right now, we're joined by our good friend covering the NBA from The Ringer. You can find him on Twitter at YourManDivine. Dan Devine joins us here on Fox Sports Radio. Hey, Dan, happy Wednesday. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing today?
Doing spectacular. Philadelphia is doing all right as well. Was last night some healing? Was last night a Band-Aid? Is everything all good in the city of brotherly love? Or are we still taking the undercurrent of what happened earlier this week with Joel Embiid's social media fun?
I think it's still like a if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes kind of situation.
Right.
We'll see how it how the vibe unfolds. But it was certainly a big exhale that kind of reminded you what that team, why people were so high on the possibilities for that team. You know, you see when Embiid plants himself down low and makes himself the mismatch nightmare that he can be, all of a sudden teams got to foul him, got to put him on the line, can't handle him with just one, they got to send two players on a double. and then all of a sudden the floor looks a lot more open when you're kicking it out to open players. You see Ben Simmons rampaging in transition, getting downhill, getting into the lane, drawing help, kicking out, getting all the way to the rim, and you're like, oh, right, these are two, you know, top 10, top 15 caliber talents in the league when everything's going right. It's about figuring out the where to move the pieces on the board and how to put the puzzle together. And Brett Brown took a big swing in doing that by moving Al Horford to the bench. Whether that is going to be an ongoing concern and what the rotation looks like moving forward will certainly bear watching. But getting a win like that against a team like the Clippers on a national stage in which your key pieces look as good as they did certainly lowers the temperature for everybody a little bit.
Dan, what do you make of the home-road split for the 76ers? It's like two different teams.
It really is. It's unbelievable. I think it's 25-2 at home and 9-19 on the road, I believe.
It's terrible, yeah.
It's like, you know, like as soon as they go through gate check, all of a sudden a different set of players comes out. But I think part of that, and there was Kevin Pelton of ESPN had some good stats breaking this down the other day. Like a lot of the variance there is about 3-point shooting, and so I mean obviously the Sixers are not an elite 3-point shooting team, but they shoot better at home than they do on the road, and their opponents have actually shot better against Philadelphia when they're at home than when they're on the road too. And sometimes those things will even out over time. Sometimes it might be a schematic issue where you're not doing as good a job getting out on shooters. I think you'd bet on a defense that good being able to tamp that down a little bit with all the length they have, all the ability that they can have to sort of blanket guys on the perimeter. But it's certainly concerning, and it's, you know, you'd love to see, in the same way that last night provided a big exhale of like, all right, okay, this team is still a 50-plus win team with top-end talent that's going to be a tough matchup for anybody in the playoffs. I think you'd like to see one or two of those kind of performances away from Philadelphia to feel a lot better about where the Sixers might land in the postseason, because if that, as presently constituted, and if the standings keep going the way they are, they're not going to get a whole lot of home games in the playoffs, so they better start winning some of them on the road.
Dan Devine of The Ringer joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. He's Jonas Knox. I'm Dan Beyer in for Doug Gottlieb today here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. One more on the Sixers, at least from me. Then who bears the responsibility for this light switch turning on and off, whether it be home and road, whether it be a big game against the Clippers after some turmoil? This has seemed to be a bit of an MO. As you said, this was a team that we thought last night that by appearance could compete for an NBA championship. Who takes the blame for this switch seemingly being turned on and off all the time?
Well, I think the good news here is that there's not a small amount of blame, so everybody can get a little bit. You can point some of it at Elton Brand and at the brain trust in the Sixers. That, you know, there have been multiple executives over the course of years that have kind of put together rosters that don't fit together all that great. You know, there's, you know, the ongoing questions about how Embiid and Ben Simmons fit together. I think that they've proven that when they've had proper shooting around them and sort of floor spacing around them, they can be dynamite offensively and certainly an elite defensive team. Al Horford was sort of the cost of doing business for not losing Jimmy Butler for nothing, and he can play an important role as a defensive backstop for Embiid, and their biggest issue last year was whenever Embiid goes to the bench, we get trucked. So there's a role for him on the team, but how he fits in the starting lineup with those two guys makes everything tougher. It's a team that's basically tons of power forwards and centers and hardly anybody that handles the ball, and so, or can run a pick and roll or, you know, do that while pulling up to shoot. And so the loss of Butler really hurts them there, but so part of it's team construction, part of it is Brett Brown. At times, it's, you know, you wonder if he's got everybody sort of full and undivided attention, or if it's a little bit of, you know, guys are kind of going to do what they want to do regardless, and you wonder if it's been a while with his voice there. I think it's an important voice, I think he's a better coach than he gets credit for, but sometimes those things can run a little bit stale. And then the players, you know, I mean, if Joel Embiid's going to go through sort of an ongoing year-long, am I, you know, what kind of personality am I? Am I the, you know, kind of good a-hole, you know, whatever. Like, am I this kind of guy, or am I that kind of guy, or what's my approach, or what's not? If you can do that when you're averaging 28-12 and your team is stomping people. You can't do it when it's, you know, you're going 9-30 and you don't look all that good. So there's a little bit for everybody, but I think the hope, if you're a Sixers fan, is nights like last night can happen and can happen more frequently, and if you string a few of those together, everything starts to look a little bit better.
Dan Devine of The Ringer covers the NBA, joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Dan Beyer, Jonas Knox in for Doug Gottlieb here on FSR. Since they've made the trade and gone the small ball Rockets, they're 2-2. One of those losses was a buzzer beater freak shot by Utah at a loss at home. Are they any closer to an NBA title with the move they just made going with this lineup than they were a couple of years ago when they had a Game 7 in the Western Conference Finals at home?
The short answer is I have no idea, and the longer answer is I think that's kind of the point. Daryl Morey famously, before they made the trade for Chris Paul a couple years ago, said we need to do something to up our risk profile. We need to do something that gives us sort of a wider potential a number of outcomes because we thought, at that point the Rockets felt like their team had kind of hit a ceiling in terms of where it could go. So then that happens again with the Chris Paul situation. He goes out and Russell Westbrook comes in, and the construction of the team as it was fine, but it required James Harden to score 37 a night and sort of carry everything, and when he went off the floor, it all went to pot. They had to do something different. Well, this is different. This is they weren't going to win games by holding you to 95 points anyway, so let's try to score 130 and see how it goes. And I think over a broader sample of games, you might see it look like this. They're going to try to shoot 45, 50 threes a game. They're going to try to make do defensively by stopping penetration on the perimeter rather than letting guys get to the rim. But sometimes you're going to wind up with free runners at the rim. Sometimes you're going to wind up getting out-rebounded by an obscene amount. Sometimes you're going to get blown off the floor, and a lot of times you're going to be in closer games because you can hit more threes than they can hit twos. And so that's kind of the gamble here. It's we think we're going to be able to do enough to score enough from beyond the arc and at the free throw line and at the rim because you're going to be stretched out defensively to guard us. We believe that we're going to be good enough on offense to beat you even though we don't have a traditional center. And I am skeptical like everybody else about how that turns out in a playoff series, but I think that if you're a team that's a little bit more traditional in the way you're constructed like Utah, who has had problems with Houston for the last couple of years in the postseason, I think you got to be looking at that and saying I would really prefer not to see that five out system where they're going to bomb 53s a game over the course of a couple of weeks in a playoff series than maybe somebody a little more conventional. So I think that's the idea. We weren't at the apex of where we wanted to be with our previous roster construction around Clint Capella, so let's try something different. And give them top marks for that, if nothing else. It is certainly different.
You recently did a piece for The Ringer on the Raptors, and I don't want people to not go to the piece by asking me this question, but it's 15 in a row. It's without Kawhi Leonard. How in the world is this getting done in Toronto?
It's many hands makes light work. The thing that's been so impressive to me about how they're doing it, part of it is that they've had a really sort of a softer stretch of schedule. You got to say that, right? They haven't played a whole ton of great teams over the last month, but they've done what really good teams do, which is beat up on those bad teams and then find ways to win even when they're not supposed to win, come from behind wins when they're missing guys because they've been without Marc Gasol for a bunch of games. They've been without Norman Powell, an important guy for them. Every time they've lost a guy, Kyle Lowry, Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, every time they've lost somebody important, somebody else has stepped up and done something. They play extremely hard. They're extremely smart. Nick Nurse, in terms of the way he's able to construct their defenses, shift their coverages, devise plans of attack, that make do with what they have on a given night, is one of the best in the league, if not sort of the front runner for Coach of the Year right now. It's been everybody, and Siakam has revealed that he is ready to be a number one option. We'll see where that is in the postseason, but he's taken a step forward beyond, I think, what anybody would have dreamed of. Lowry's been sensational. Fred VanVleet has proven he's a starter at the NBA level and not just a really good backup point guard. Sort of every piece along the way has taken a step forward, and they keep finding contributors. Terrence Davis, who's out of Ole Miss, has been a real sensational pickup for them out of the second round of the draft. Ready-made guy to plug into their backcourt rotation. It's smart scouting, it's smart drafting, it's great player development, it's a smart coach, and it's a bunch of players who want to prove, hey, we weren't just a one-man team, the rest of us were there too, and so far, so good.
We just did an interview without mentioning the Lakers or Clippers.
That's right.
There it is. Yeah. There it is. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan, it could be your first and only ever, but there it was.
And we're based in L.A.
Yes. How about that? Yeah. Round of applause for us. Dan Devine of The Ringer.
Good job, Dan.
We appreciate it. Find him on Twitter at YourManDevine. We'll do it again soon, Dan. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
So there was news from Cleveland. There's news in different parts of the National Football League, whether it be in Cincinnati and Atlanta. But the main storylines that we're following in the NFL right now this offseason seem to originate either from Dallas with Dak Prescott or out of New England with Tom Brady. Jonas, and the Tom Brady negotiations with the New England Patriots. According to a report earlier today from ESPN, there have been no talks between the sides on getting any deal done, with obviously the intention of Tom Brady being able to hit free agency, something that Bob Kraft, the Patriots owner, said recently that he just felt it was best for both parties to explore possibly other options, hoping that in the end they are able to reunite.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun offseason because of all these different stories and how they sort of play out. One of the conversations out there was the Patriots are kind of in a bind because they need to get this figured out before there's a dead money cap hit to their roster. But it feels like, and this has sort of been my impression, ever since Tom Brady negotiated to where they don't have the ability to franchise him after this season, I don't know if either side wants to leave each other, but I think they're more open to the idea of it now than they've ever been before. And I think that's clear.
I think that what teams across the NFL need to do is realize that Tom Brady's biggest fan, maybe even more so than Giselle or any of his children, is Bob Kraft. And if the Patriots owner is willing to let his quarterback even just go out into free agency, to just dip his toe in the water and not give him a contract that is 2 or 3 years with some exorbitant amount of money, to not even have that opportunity to do so, because that wouldn't even be the franchise tag. It's, we'll sign you to a multi-year deal. We'll pay you $35 million a year. We'll pay you $40 million a year, make you the highest paid guy. Whatever the case may be, to not even have an opportunity to present that, to me, tells me that the guy who could be most blinded by who Tom Brady is as a quarterback is the one that maybe sees more than the other 31 teams do. So if by Bob Kraft allowing Tom Brady and saying it's best for everyone, I think in the back of Bob Kraft's mind, he knows that this is it for Tom Brady.
They're calling his bluff. They're telling him, okay, you think it's good somewhere else? All right, go ahead. Because I actually think Bob Kraft feels like Tom Brady's going to go out there. He's going to try and see the open market. And the idea would be that he goes out there, he sees what's available, what his options are, and then realizes it's better just to come back. It's the old, you know, let him walk away, and if it's meant to be, they'll come back eventually. That's how I feel Bob Kraft is looking at this. I think he's challenging, calling Tom Brady's bluff. If you think there's a better offer out there, go check it out and tell us you don't want to be here anymore when you see what's available.
But even just the opportunity to let him check, to me, tells me that they aren't afraid to lose him. Like, Bob Kraft doesn't want Tom Brady. Tom Brady as a Patriot for his entire life or to retire this offseason is actually what Bob Kraft said that he would hope would happen with Tom Brady once he hits free agency. Hopefully that he comes back or that he decides to retire. This past weekend at the Oscars doing things was asked over the weekend, you know, what do you want to happen with this Tom Brady thing? And he says, you know what I want. But that doesn't say I want Tom Brady back as the starting quarterback. He wants Tom Brady in a Patriots uniform or to not play for anyone else.
Yeah.
And I think those are two different things. So if I'm an NFL team looking at bringing in Tom Brady, that's why Bob Kraft's stance on all of this to me is so telling on where he thinks, not even just to where Bill Belichick thinks where Tom Brady is, because realistically, Belichick may have had a different view but got overruled by the owner, especially when it came to the Jimmy Garoppolo situation of what are we going to do? Well, you end up having then to trade him at the trade deadline because Tom Brady wasn't going to go anywhere. Now, if Bob Kraft is the one that's allowing to see it, I think that's a warning sign to everybody else around of saying, like, hey, this is, if Bob Kraft is willing to let him dip his toe in the water and willing to call his bluff, then it also means that they maybe aren't as worried about losing him if he ends up doing it.
Do you think if Brady wants to come back, you think they want him back?
I think Bob Kraft would love him back in a Patriots uniform of being that all-time Patriots thing. But as the actual player, I don't think that the drop-off of if Tom Brady would leave as opposed to someone else that they are bringing in would be as big of a drop-off as it would be in previous seasons.
And it's also, this is sort of a tough offseason for Tom Brady to dive into the free agent waters. First of all, he's coming off a down year. I guess it's fair to say that was a down year. You can talk about the weapons all you want, but it's the worst year he's played in quite some time of football, as far as that goes. Also, there are a ton of other options out there. quarterbacks who are a lot younger, who teams are going to be looking at, not to mention you've got a decent to good quarterback draft class if these guys pan out, and there's some questions there. And then you've got Trevor Lawrence coming out next year. So he's kind of in this tough spot. So I do agree the fact that Bob Kraft is willing to let him go test the open market is a telling sign about where they think he's at in his career. I also think that they do not believe that anybody's going to make him a good enough offer for him to want to walk away from New England. Like, I think they look around the landscape and say, all right, go see what you can get. Go see what it is.
If he was so valued, do you think they would even let him have that opportunity?
I think, because I don't think it's so cut and dry. I don't think it's a, well, you know, we don't need Tom Brady. We can go let him walk and we'll figure it out, because they don't really have a contingency plan. Like, there's no plan in place. So it's almost like a bluffing game. If they had Jacoby Brissett, who is still on the roster, there's no plan in place to replace him. So it's almost like this, they're butting heads over whatever the money is or whatnot. And Bob Kraft is saying, all right, go figure it out. And ultimately, we think he's going to come back. And when he comes back, it's going to be more towards our terms than whatever he's asking, which reportedly has been, you know, $25 to $30 million.
We use Ryan Fitzpatrick in a lot of different things, but almost like the journeyman quarterback. It's kind of the baseline of, all right, is your quarterback better than Ryan Fitzpatrick,
right?
I think is fair. And I don't know how different New England is if Ryan Fitzpatrick is their quarterback last year.
Andy Dalton's also been a guy thrown out there. If the craziness happens and Tom Brady goes somewhere else, there's been talk about Andy Dalton. I just, and maybe this is because I can't picture it, but I have a hard time believing that Tom Brady would go somewhere else. But I do feel like it's closer to a realistic possibility now than it has ever been before. But that being said, I also couldn't picture Joe Montana anywhere else. Next thing you know, he's throwing touchdowns on Monday Night Football in a number 19 Chiefs jersey.
The funny thing with Kraft are a couple of different things as well, Jonas. But Bob Kraft has also said that Tom Brady earned the right to enter free agency. Well, Tom Brady probably entered the right to enter free agency on his previous contract. And the one previous to that. And the one previous to that. So in looking at all of this, like, after he wins, you know, three Super Bowls as he does, and then they have that drought for, you know, 9 years, at some point during that time, he probably had already earned his right to do it. So to hear him say that now, to me, that doesn't carry a lot of weight and lends more to, I think, Bob Kraft knowing that Tom Brady, if he has anything left, it's going to be this year. And after that, It's you're entering Peyton Manning territory. It wouldn't be bad for another team to take on Tom Brady as he's faltering. Think of all the things that Tom Brady would have to do to go to another team. Do you run his offense? Do you run the head coach's offense? How is that all going to work out? Like all of those things. I think Bob Kraft's willing to be like, yeah, okay. And if New England has to move on, then move on, because again, the drop off isn't as severe.
What do you think Belichick wants?
Oh, I think Bill Belichick wants to win. Point blank, that's it. It's the only thing. He looks at what's best for the football team. And I do think that Robert Kraft's ability to let Tom Brady enter free agency shows that Kraft is hitching his wagon to Belichick now. With the Garoppolo deal and forcing Belichick essentially to trade him and get something for him before he left in free agency, Kraft was attached to Tom Brady. And I think that changed. And I think that something else has changed this offseason, that if... Remember when the New York Giants fired Pat Shurmur and their ownership said, we're looking to shake things up. What's the one team Bill Belichick would leave New England for?
Oh, the Giants.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if the Giants said to New England, we'll give you three first-round picks for Bill Belichick. And now Bill Belichick's not going to be the head coach for the next 20 years. It's not going to be the case. We'll give you three first-round picks, including number four, in the upcoming draft for Bill Belichick to be our head coach. If I'm Robert Kraft, I would have considered it. But you don't have 38-year-old Tom Brady or even 35-year-old Tom Brady. You have going on 43-year-old Tom Brady. So the point being of if the New York Giants really wanted to make their big splash this offseason, you call up New England and say, what does it take for Bill Belichick? They don't do that. What do? They hire the protege of Bill Belichick to come to New York. So it tells me that maybe it wasn't as far off. Maybe the Giants threw something out there to New England. How much would it take to get Bill? Bob Kraft, I mean, we're about to enter this new era. With Brady gone, Belichick's going to be our guy. I'm just throwing it out there. A lot of things that could have crossed paths in different ways things have could have gone. Instead, we're sitting here wondering if Tom Brady's going to be back in New England when free agency hits.
It is an odd situation. And Tom Curran sort of threw this out there because he was reporting. And there's a lot of different rumors that have come out. But Tom Curran has been covering the Patriots for a long time. And he threw out there the idea that, look, why would Brady go to the trouble of all that he's done and ask for them not to franchise him and get that worked and to test free agency only to come back to the same situation? Like in his point was the timeline doesn't add up. Brady wants to know that the Patriots are going to build around him. But the problem is they have to make a decision before they can show that they're going to build around him because that's free agency and the draft and all that. So if there's really just that lack of trust between the two, then maybe it's just ultimately Brady's going to go somewhere else. I find it hard to believe. I feel like there's a little bit of gamesmanship here. And the fact that we've gotten to this point tells me something must have happened in the last negotiation to where both sides have been kind of rigid towards each other since then. That's what the feeling is.
Who do you think the gamesmanship is between then? Brady and Belichick?
Brady and Belichick and Kraft.
Because I think that Kraft, as much as he wants to be the innocent bystander, ends up getting reeled into it. Just like the Jimmy Garoppolo deal of, you know, Bill wanted Jimmy Garoppolo as his quarterback. And that's to move on in the future. There's no reason for Jimmy Garoppolo to be traded when he was actually traded and for what he got at that time. And I think just at that point, it's, you know, Bob Kraft saying, all right, I'm going to go to the guy that I kiss before every game, and that's Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You know,
Although, they've won. I mean, and you and I have had a similar conversation about, you know, the Colts, if going back now, seeing them make the move and take Andrew Luck, if you were to take what Peyton Manning did since Andrew Luck came into the league, I would have taken Peyton Manning's run over what Andrew Luck did with
absolutely.
The Colts. And so we can, like, everybody goes back to, well, you know, they traded away Jimmy Garoppolo. How many Super Bowls were they in after they traded Garoppolo? Like two or three? And they won a couple of them, or at least one of them. So I think they made the right decision. They just didn't get enough back for him. Mm-hmm. Like, they could have gotten more. And that's the odd part of that deal. And it feels like that deal was something that was done based on Kyle Shanahan and Belichick becoming close at the combine after the Super Bowl. And the reports were in Indianapolis, those guys spent a lot of time together. And Belichick had such respect for him that he kind of hooked him up with that deal and for a second round pick, which they could have gotten a ton more for him.
Sure. So. And if it was in the plans, realistically, they could have traded him the offseason before. Because why are you bringing in a quarterback at the trade deadline? Like, if there was the actual message of, you know, hey, we're going to keep Tom for a year that offseason, then you could have traded Jimmy Garoppolo in his final year to San Francisco and had him play the whole year and signed a long-term
deal. It was
deal.
Almost like Belichick threw a fit that Bob Kraft wanted to go with Brady long-term, and Belichick said, okay, fine, here, second-round pick, bye.
Well, they had. There was nothing else they could do because otherwise he leaves via free agency. So he was put in between a rock and a hard place.